Welcome to the Myasthenia Gravis edition of Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the MG community.
Hello, and welcome to the Rare Care Podcast. This is your host, Larry Luxner, Senior Correspondent for Rare Disease Advisor, reporting from the 15th International Conference on Myasthenia and Related Disorders here in the Netherlands. Our guest is Dr. Richard Nowak, Director of the Myasthenia Gravis Clinic at Yale School of Medicine in New Haven, Connecticut. A neurologist by training, Dr. Nowak works with the Yale Medicine Neuromuscular Medicine Program, which is supported by the Muscular Dystrophy Association and is a designated MDA-ALS clinic. In 2013, Dr. Nowak was awarded a $4.8 million grant to conduct the first ever clinical trial for myasthenia gravis that was sponsored by the National Institute of Health. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
It's an honor to have you here. We'd like to talk about, in general terms, about myasthenia gravis, where we've been and where we're going. I wanted to start by asking you about the current state of treatment for this relatively rare disease.
So first off, I would like to say that it's a really exciting time in myasthenia gravis research and the application of specifically targeted treatment strategies for this very rare autoimmune condition. I think that there's been a number of advancements that have occurred in the last 5 to 10 years, which is why my general position is that of great excitement. There's still quite a bit of work that we have to do in terms of advancing therapies and improving outcomes for our patients with this condition.
How widespread is myasthenia gravis in the United States?
So it is a rare disease. So by definition, that means that less than 200,000 Americans have myasthenia gravis. The current estimates are that there are approximately 80,000 to maybe upwards of 100,000 Americans in the United States with autoimmune myasthenia.
And of which, how many are women?
There is a predominance of women, so I would say roughly about two-thirds approximately of individuals with myasthenia are female.
And pediatric is still relatively rare, right?
It is relatively rare, I would say that. So the number of patients that we have, I don't have good estimates on those, but certainly a small percentage are pediatric.
Okay. And the MG clinic at Yale, can you talk about it? I'm assuming it's one of the major centers in the United States for treating this disease.
Yes, thank you for that question. So we're among the largest myasthenia gravis clinics and programs in the country at this point. We have approximately 600 to 700 active patients that we treat. And it's a dedicated center where we not only have clinics dedicated to seeing patients with myasthenia gravis, but we also have built upon that and have opportunities for patients to participate in clinical trials, as well as we have a translational research program where we're attempting to better understand disease, identify biomarkers, and at the end of the day, improve outcomes for our patients.
How big is the center? Is there a way to quantify how many docs you have there? What's the annual budget?
In terms of the budget, that's difficult to state. It's a clinical budget for the most part. I'm the primary neurologist that is taking care of our myasthenia gravis patients, but we have approximately a dozen specialists in neuromuscular medicine that play a role in taking care of our patients, and including having patients have electrodiagnostic studies if needed in cases of diagnostic dilemmas or challenges, things like EMG, single fiber EMG, repetitive nerve stimulation testing. So it's a comprehensive program and clinic that has aspects dedicated to the seeing patients, optimizing their treatment, and also providing opportunities for research for our patients.
Okay, so earlier we were speaking about how the disease is classified in the U.S. versus in Europe. And you mentioned that in Europe, for example, myasthenia gravis is also kind of, in some sense, lumped in with other diseases, neuromuscular disease, whereas in the United States, it's separated from things like multiple sclerosis and CIDP, for example.
Yeah, so first off, myasthenia gravis is an autoimmune condition. In the U.S., the specialists that take care of myasthenia gravis are neuromuscular specialists because it's a disorder of neuromuscular transmission. However, it is an autoimmune condition. In different parts of the world, autoimmune neurologic conditions are typically taken care of by neuroimmunologists such as MS specialists, etc., because it is an immune-mediated condition. In the U.S., it's different, and I think that is more of a function of the training and the subspecialization and how the subspecialty training has evolved over time. Just because someone has a muscle weakness does not necessarily mean that they have autoimmune myasthenia gravis. There's a number of conditions that could represent, including different types of muscle disorders specifically, or nerve disorders such as neuropathies. And as you noted before, we have a neuromuscular center, an MDA clinic. So when an individual presents with muscle weakness, perhaps the first thing that does not come to mind is myasthenia gravis. So it's important to get the diagnosis correct right off the start, and so that we can then better optimize the care plan for our patients over time.
Right. And because it's not a hereditary disease, it doesn't really matter what your family history is, right? And therefore, gene therapy would not be very useful in treating a disease like this.
That's correct. I will just point to one thing. There is something called congenital myasthenic syndrome, which is a gene-based disease. But autoimmune myasthenia gravis, the more common, is an autoimmune condition where there is not a specific gene that's abnormal that results in disease.
Is the incidence of myasthenia gravis in the United States different significantly from other countries?
I can't say that it's any different. There are differences among the different antibody subtypes, for instance, like acetylcholine receptor antibody versus muscle-specific kinase antibody positive disease, where there seems to be an increase in individuals that are Black with MuSK myasthenia gravis as opposed to Caucasian. But I wouldn't say there is terribly any difference. It's been reported in Asia that thymoma-associated disease can be upwards of 20 or more percent, whereas in the U.S., again, different race, ethnicity breakdown, it's closer to about 10%. So there are certain variations in the race, ethnicity. Differences are not clearly understood and characterized fully at this time.
Dr. Nock, could you talk a bit about how you got into this field, what your background is, and why this particular disease?
So I'm a neurologist by training and also fellowship trained in neuromuscular medicine. I got into myasthenia gravis at a time where there was not much research, and certainly there was not a great effort in clinical trials and new treatment development. We published about 15 years ago an initial report on what proportion of patients with myasthenia gravis are medically refractory, have inadequately controlled disease. And we found that about 15, maybe up to 20% of patients had medically refractory disease. During my training in neurology and neuromuscular medicine, there were many patients that were very sick, multiple hospitalizations, myasthenia gravis exacerbations and crises. And I felt that there was an opportunity for me to make a difference in this condition where there was not much going on. You noted earlier about our initial funding for a phase 2 clinical trial with rituximab and myasthenia gravis. So many of the treatments prior to the last 5 to 7 years have been off-label use of medications developed for other indications. And we had success based on uncontrolled studies, but more so based on case series with the use of rituximab for medically refractory patients. And so this led to developing a program dedicated to understanding the role of B cells and B cell immunobiology in myasthenia gravis. So it was a natural progression and a collaboration in part with my colleague, Dr. Kevin O'Connor, who is a basic science immunologist, to really try to better understand the role of B cells and the nuances, and also to apply targeted treatment strategies for our patients with myasthenia gravis.
Perfect. So with that in mind, speaking about clinical trials, I'd like to ask you about the presentation that you will make today, which is an analysis of the myasthenia gravis inebilizumab trial, MINT, which suggests, and I'm reading from the abstract, that the drug known also as Uplizna reduces the risk of disease exacerbations and the need for rescue therapy compared to placebo in patients with MG. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, thanks so much. So MINT is a phase 3 placebo-controlled clinical trial that included both patients with acetylcholine receptor or muscle-specific kinase antibody-positive generalized myasthenia gravis. It was intended to evaluate the safety and efficacy of inebilizumab in generalized myasthenia gravis patients. The study met its primary endpoint, demonstrating that patients treated with inebilizumab were successfully and statistically significantly able to reduce their MG-ADL score compared to baseline by week 26 in the combined study population. So that looked at both AChR and MuSK antibody-positive disease together. What we are presenting today at the conference is secondary endpoints that looked at the use of rescue therapy, which included either IVIG or plasmapheresis during the randomized controlled trial period, and also looked at the rate and odds of myasthenia gravis exacerbation in the study population during the randomized control trial period. So what we observed in the study is that in the patients treated with inebilizumab through week 26, 16% of patients had a disease exacerbation in the inebilizumab arm as compared to 35% in the placebo group. So that was...
That's a significant difference.
Yeah, that is a statistically significant difference, correct.
In this trial, how many patients were involved and where was it conducted?
So the trial was international, so there were many sites across the globe. Over 100 study sites were included in the clinical trial.
And how many patients were involved?
So we had a total of 190 acetylcholine receptor antibody-positive patients and 48 MuSK patients.
And how many controls?
It was a one-to-one design, so 119 versus 119.
Got it. In summary, you found that there was a significant difference in the need to reduce the need for rescue therapy.
Yeah, so what I noted earlier was the rate of MG exacerbation. The use of rescue therapy in the treatment arm was 8.4% as compared to 23.9% in the placebo group. Again, showing a statistical significance between the two groups. Again, in the 26-week randomized control period for the AChR and MuSK populations combined.
I wanted to ask, we're almost out of time, but given that you did receive this grant, well, 12 years ago, and this was the first clinical trial for myasthenia gravis ever funded by NIH, what are your thoughts on the current cutbacks, both to NIH and the FDA?
Yes, I think that the current NIH research funding cutbacks will likely have a significant impact on advances in not only myasthenia gravis research, but also research in general. Again, the inebilizumab study is in some ways an extension or a learnings from our work with rituximab and myasthenia gravis. So our rituximab phase 2 trial, which was named BMG, demonstrated futility. While it demonstrated safety, it did not meet a go decision for a phase 3 efficacy trial. That was a CD20-directed B-cell strategy. Based on those learnings, the MINT was developed and conceived because it's a CD19-directed B-cell treatment strategy. So without the findings of BMG, there would likely not have been MINT. So without the initial funding to do our BMG study that demonstrated futility, there would likely not have been a development of a CD19-directed treatment strategy for myasthenia gravis or MINT.
We're out of time. We've been talking with Dr. Richard Nowak, director of the Myasthenia Gravis Clinic at Yale School of Medicine in New Haven, Connecticut. This is Larry Luxner for Rare Disease Advisor.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.